Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 26, 2021. Section A. Winter Storm. Midland Freshwater District Winterized Equipment Before Storm Hit by Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. While city utility workers repaired 45 water main breaks and service leaks after last week's winter storm, the Midland County Freshwater Supply District delivered up to 18.9 million gallons of water a day to keep the city's system running. The facility provides 3 million to 5 million gallons of water on an average winter day, according to Kyle Kruger, manager of the facility at the T-Bar Ranch water field in Winkler County that connects to the city's system through a 67-mile pipeline. Kruger said they began winterizing equipment in 2019 when they started a backup generator project that was completed about 2 months ago. They also purchased heaters and reopened wells that were offline for maintenance a few days before the temperatures dropped, then continually rotated wells to prevent freezing. We try to identify our major issues or concerns or weaknesses that could happen, Kruger said. We look for those on a daily basis. The Freshwater District's main role is to step in during emergency situations when surface water becomes unavailable. We are always on standby and ready to go. We have to prepare to do this at any point in time. Kruger said the water supply from T-Bar Ranch helped the city avoid declaring a boil water notice, which millions of Texans were under statewide after 9 days of below-freezing temperatures created infrastructure problems. He credited Midland maintaining water access during last week's freeze to the city's construction of a water field and pipeline 8 years ago and cooperation between city and freshwater district staff. That planning, along with the team who runs the Midland County Freshwater Supply District, was really the reason the city of Midland did not need to issue boil water notices. In a summary of last week's events submitted to the city manager's office, Utilities Director Carl Crago noted the work of staff at the T-Bar Ranch facility after they were asked to quadruple water delivery. The operators stayed on site working from an RV to run the wells by hand for 4 days. This enabled the supply to be provided to the city while crews located, isolated, and repaired the water main breaks. Utilities department staff were also busy last week, responding to more than 200 service calls, according to Crago. In a phone interview, he said they had 4 contractors on call repairing burst pipes and leaks. Crago said the 45 water main ruptures and service leaks were the most the city has ever had at one time. They usually repair about 120 breaks and leaks in a year. Most line repairs had been completed by Thursday, and Crago estimated all repairs would be finished by next week. Transportation crews will fix any roads that were damaged after the utilities department finishes the water main repairs. Real estate. Report: Political Climate Impacts Home Sales in Midland by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. It appears the skepticism with politics nationally is having an impact on the sale of homes in Midland County. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reports that 142 homes were sold during the month of January. That was less than any month going back to April 2016, even the months of April and May 2020 when the COVID pandemic and oil price downturn hit the region. Janine Pruitt of the Janine Pruitt team told the Reporter Telegram this week she believes the issue has to do with the economic uncertainty because of the 2020 presidential election, the delay in results being announced, and concern with potential energy regulation changing, possibly causing job cuts, etc., caused buyers to move forward cautiously, Pruitt said. We had plenty of homes to choose from and very attractive interest rates. The only reasonable reason for low sales was buyer caution. Pruitt announced this week that her team opened the downtown office, a location she believes will be a great spot to meet with our clients, join local charities to raise money for organizations within our community, and also offer concierge closings. The A&M Real Estate Center showed few houses sold, but those houses were getting top dollar. The $350,713 average per home sold inside Midland County was the highest since last summer, and the median price for a home sold inside Midland County was $319,500, the highest since the center started tracking median prices. The next highest was $317,500 in August 2019. Pruitt said the few factors that may have contributed to the record median price were the low amount of sales and that around 85% of sales were less than $400,000. Still, the sales price floor was high enough to keep the median price well above $300,000. In December, the median price was $287,500. By comparison, the median price for a home sold in Ector County was $206,500. In both Midland and Ector counties, the number of homes on the market increased again. The number of homes decreased from 755 in December to 790 in January. That computed to 3.8 months of inventory. The inventory in Ector County was 40.7 months, according to Real Estate Center. In January 2020, there were 542 homes on the market, or 2.3 months of inventory. Midland author releases book about racial issues and healing by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis at hearstnp.com. Local author Cynthia Connor Goyang has announced the upcoming release of her novel, Three Midnights in Manford, on Friday. Her new book is a healing thriller about three residents' response to the shooting of a black man by a white police officer. The resulting violence, destruction, and political cover-up shed light on the city's underbelly. She has previously published Just One Touch, which is a novel about the woman in the Bible who touched Jesus' robe and is then healed. Three Nights in Manford is my second novel, and I'm really enthused about it, she said. I have also had some magazine articles published and an anthology that I was included in. She moved to Midland with her husband Tony in 1986. She is a librarian and has worked for the Midland County Public Library. She has been working on the book for 3 years. A friend encouraged her to publish it through Amazon and Kindle. When I began to write it, events like police shootings weren't as relevant in the media. The book's basis is from 2 Chronicles chapter 7:14, which states, "If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then the light here from heaven will forgive their sins and heal their land." I wrote it with that basis, and upon that basis, I made the plot around it, she said. That basis was a black man being shot by a white police officer. It is set in a large metropolitan area. It indicates how the city reacted to the shooting, and then how my three main characters reacted to the shooting. Goyang said she has written the book from the experience of how it impacts herself as an African-American woman and as a mother of a son who works in law enforcement. She said she is sensitive to what the African-American community is experiencing, as well as what is happening in the law enforcement community. She also worked with her children to make sure parts of the book are authentic. I'm sure my children will charge me as consultants because I have one son who is a police officer, the second one is a photojournalist, and the third works in medical managing. I have aspects of each of those within my books. None of her sons have read the book yet, so she says she believes they will be pleasantly surprised by the work. She said people will be inspired and enthralled by this healing thriller, which they won't be able to put down. The book offers a vision for the healing of the troubled land. I would like people to realize that we have an incredible amount of issues right now. America is suffering with so many things. We are suffering with COVID-19, with recent political upheaval, and various things personally, as well as racial injustice. I'm hoping people take that away, that no matter what we are suffering from as a community, that the Lord Jesus is over it all, and that He is the one that will bring about the changes that are needed. The book will be released today on Kindle and Amazon. Visit www.amazon.com/Knights-Manford-Cynthia-Connor-Goyang. Goyang said she is already starting to work on her next book. Community Worship Center to give out free clothes during Project Give Back by J.C. Lewis. jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. This Saturday, the Communion Worship Center will be giving out free clothes during Project Give Back. The church will have clothes for the entire family available starting at 10 a.m. at Washington Park, 1803 East Indiana. Families can get clothes from gently used to new until noon or until clothes run out. If some clothes are left over after noon, church officials will work to get them donated. Community Worship Center has been giving away clothes since starting the church in 2013. This is a regular occurrence, but the church officials also decided to have a distribution after the winter storm might have left some families with particular needs, Pastor Latoya Mayberry said. We have coats, jeans, business attire, and some people have given dress clothes, so it is for males, females, and children of various ages. She said that even though there is Goodwill and other low-cost clothing stores, this will be completely free and no documentation will be needed to receive clothes. For us, we wanted people to not have to provide documentation. Instead, just if they're humble enough to remove their pride, they can get free clothes. Throughout the year, people will bring the church clothing and shoes to donate through Project Give Back, which distributes the donated items throughout the year. If anyone wants to donate clothes, they can go to the Community Worship Center's Facebook page at www.facebook.com/CWC Midland and send a message or call 638-7091 to schedule a pickup time. Local briefs from staff and wire reports. Midland. First Baptist Church of Midland invites those affected by winter storms to share the needs. First Baptist Church of Midland has invited those affected by the winter storm to share their needs, according to a Facebook post. While this isn't a guarantee the church can help, it's an invitation to talk with First Baptist staff about it. Participants don't have to be a part of the church, but need to live in Midland County. Visit www.myfirstfamily.ccbchurch.com. to fill out a form and submit to get started. Those wanting to help people in need to recover from the winter storm can participate by filling out this form. First Baptist is putting together teams to assist. People wanting to volunteer don't have to be a member of the church. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. Corpus Christi, Texas to find and vaccinate homebound seniors against COVID-19. Texas officials are taking a page from Corpus Christi's playbook and stepping up efforts to vaccinate seniors against COVID-19. Governor Greg Abbott announced the Save Our Seniors initiative at a news conference in Corpus Christi on Thursday, saying that more than 1,100 National Guard troops will be deployed to help communities identify homebound seniors and vaccinate them against the new coronavirus. Corpus Christi Mayor Paulette Gajardo said the city's fire department has administered 2,000 vaccines in the past month to homebound seniors identified by the city's Meals on Wheels program, and that 144 have been vaccinated fully. The vaccines come came as a state health officials reported 7,011 new coronavirus cases and 305 new deaths from COVID-19. The newly reported cases and deaths pushed the number of confirmed Texas cases reported during the pandemic to 2,621,181, and the state's pandemic death toll to almost 42,285, according to statistics compiled by the Texas Department of State Health Services.
Hello, this is Michael. I'll be reading articles from the oil page from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Friday, February 26th. Oil hits highest in more than a year with global supply draining, by Andres Guerra-Luz, Bloomberg. Oil climbed to the highest in more than a year amid optimism of swiftly depleting global oil inventories. Futures in New York closed 0.5% higher on Thursday. The oil futures curve continues to signal a tighter market. U.S. crude inventories are near the lowest levels in about a year, while exports of five key crudes in the North Sea fields are seen slumping in April. As a result, crude time spreads are strengthening in a bullish structure known as backwardation. West Texas Intermediate crude for April delivery gained 31 cents to settle at $63.53 a barrel. Looking forward in the market, we're seeing a significant backwardation, which signals that there is an anticipation of an easing of virus restrictions coming, said Gary Cunningham, director of Stamford, Connecticut-based Tradition Energy. The market is looking toward more normal inventories heading into the summer if we don't see a flooding of markets. U.S. crude futures are up nearly 22% in February, with expectations of shrinking supplies and as economies worldwide begin to reopen, signaling a further rebound in consumption. Still, the market is facing a possible supply increase in April from OPEC Plus. The production group meets next week to discuss its strategy, with key members differing on the path forward. By the summer, leisure travelers who haven't been able to travel, who are now vaccinated, will be driving an uptick in demand, said Jay Hatfield, CEO of InfraCap in New York. Supply is not going to respond like it has in the past, with U.S. production likely remaining restrained. Shale exporters reported almost 6 million barrels of combined oil output losses during the freeze last week. Occidental Petroleum Corporation and Pioneer Natural Resources Company, two of the largest producers in the Permian Basin, alone had a combined loss of about 3.8 million barrels, according to Bloomberg News calculations based on fourth quarter earnings reports and calls. Meanwhile, refineries along the U.S. Gulf Coast are in the process of restarting, though some plants are facing lengthy repairs to key processing units. Former Michigan Governor Granholm confirmed as Energy Secretary, by Matthew Daly, Associated Press, Washington. Former Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm won Senate confirmation Thursday to be Energy Secretary and will be a key cabinet member trying to fulfill President Joe Biden's commitment for a green economy as the United States fights to slow climate change. The vote was 64-35, with all Democrats and 14 Republicans, including GOP leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, voting yes. Granholm, 62, served two terms as governor in a state dominated by the auto industry and devastated by the 2008 recession. She has promoted emerging clean energy technologies such as electric vehicles and battery manufacturing as an answer for jobs that will be lost as the U.S. transitions away from oil, coal, and other fossil fuels. She tweeted her thanks to senators and said, "I'm obsessed with creating good-paying, clean energy jobs in all corners of America in service of addressing our climate crisis. I'm impatient for results. Now let's get to work." Senator Joe Manchin, chair of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, said Granholm has the leadership skills, vision, and compassion needed at the Energy Department to develop innovative solutions for the climate challenge while preserving jobs. Granholm is committed to working every day to ensure that we don't leave any workers behind as we move towards a cleaner energy future, said Manchin, Democrat, West Virginia. During her confirmation hearing last month, Granholm pushed her plans to embrace new wind and solar technologies, but her position caused tension with some Republicans who fear for the future of fossil fuels. "We can buy electric car batteries from Asia, or we can make them in America," Granholm told senators. "We can install wind turbines from Denmark, or we can make them in America." Wyoming Senator John Barrasso, the top Republican on the Senate Energy Committee, said Biden seems to want to pull the plug on American energy dominance, so I cannot in good conscience vote to approve his nominee for Secretary of Energy. Barrasso and other Republicans have complained that a freeze imposed by Biden on oil and gas leases on federal lands is taking a sledgehammer to Western states' economies. The moratorium could cost tens of thousands of jobs unless rescinded, Barrasso said. He and other Republicans also bemoaned Biden's rejection of the Keystone XL pipeline from Canada to the U.S. Gulf Coast, saying thousands of jobs will be lost and a friendly source of oil left idle. Granholm assured lawmakers that creating jobs was her top priority and Biden's. "We cannot leave our people behind. In West Virginia and in other fossil fuel states, there is an opportunity for us to specialize in the technologies that reduce carbon emissions, to make those technologies here, to put people to work here, and to look at other ways to diversify," she told Manchin at her January 27th hearing. During her introduction as Biden's energy secretary nominee, Granholm described arriving in the U.S. at age 4, brought from Canada, by a family seeking opportunity. She said her father found work as a bank teller and retired as head of the bank. "It's because of my family's journey and my experience in fighting for hardworking Michigan families that I have become obsessed with gaining good-paying jobs in America in a global economy," she said. In other action Thursday on Biden's cabinet nominees, Surgeon General. Surgeon General nominee Dr. Vivek Murthy said Americans must not lose track of opioid addiction and other health emergencies amid the intense national focus on overcoming the coronavirus pandemic. He told senators at a hearing that we cannot neglect the other public health crises that have been exacerbated by this pandemic, particularly the opioid epidemic, mental illness, and racial and geographic health inequities. After dipping slightly, opioid deaths have risen again, the result of street formulations laced with the powerful painkiller fentanyl. Murthy said to the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee that the overdose rescue drug naxlizone should be even more widely available and that medication-assisted treatment must be expanded. Murthy, who was the Surgeon General in the Obama administration, has drawn opposition from gun rights groups because of his assessment that gun violence is a public health problem. But he tried to dispel notions that he would launch a crusade against guns. He told Senator Mike Braum, Republican Indiana, that while he supports government studying the problem, my focus is not on this issue, and if I'm confirmed, it will be on COVID, on mental health, and substance use disorder. Trade Representative. Biden's pick to be U.S. Trade Representative is promising to work with America's allies to combat China's aggressive trade policies, indicating a break from the Trump administration's go-it-alone approach. Catherine Tai appeared Thursday before the Senate Finance Committee. She told senators that rebuilding international alliances would be a priority, as well as re-engaging with international institutions to present Beijing with a united front of U.S. allies. Tai did not address whether the Biden administration would drop President Trump's tariffs on imported steel and aluminum, or say whether it would revive former President Barack Obama's Asia-Pacific trade deal, which Trump killed. Lessons of downturn may have big oil poised for sharp recovery. By Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. The world's largest oil companies are poised for a sharp recovery from the worst oil bust in decades, according to a new report. Global energy consulting firm Wood Mackenzie said 40 of the largest oil companies are emerging from the downturn caused by the pandemic more resilient to low crude prices after slashing budgets and focusing on low-cost, high-return projects. On average, it says the large oil companies can break even when West Texas Intermediate, the U.S. crude benchmark, is priced at $38 per barrel, down from $54 per barrel before the pandemic. If U.S. crude prices this year average around $55 per barrel, oil majors are estimated to have total revenue of about $140 billion, more revenue than during any year since 2006. If the average price rises to $70 after the pandemic ends, as some experts predict, revenue could rocket to $400 billion, Wood Mackenzie said. The record annual losses being announced in the fourth quarter earnings season serve as a stark reminder that 2020 was one of the toughest years in the industry's history. But international oil companies emerged from the crisis far more resilient to lower prices, said Tom Ellicott, Wood Mackenzie's senior vice president of corporate analysis. Instead of reinvesting revenues in new oil and gas projects, large oil companies are expected to shore up balance sheets, pay down debt, and sell lower margin assets, Ellicott said. Oil majors in particular are eager to woo skeptical investors back to the energy sector after years of middling performance. The sector is in ultra-capital disciplined mode to win over investors, Ellicott said. We think the industry will stick to its tight management of investment for some time. There are concerns that a failure to invest enough in new projects could lead to a supply crunch in the coming years as companies scale back spending to focus on paying down debt. More mergers and acquisitions are expected as companies seek to maintain production levels. At the same time, large oil companies are under pressure from shareholders and regulators to invest heavily in low-carbon energy. Oil majors will have to have a disciplined approach to allocate capital to renewable energy, Wood Mackenzie said. Strategically, the move away from volume growth and towards harvesting the legacy oil and gas business is part of the energy transition reality, one in which pressure to decarbonize is only heading in one direction, Ellicott said. Texas natural gas production fell by almost half during storm, by Paul Takahashi, Houston Chronicle. Natural gas production in Texas fell by almost half during last week's winter storm as power outages, bitter cold, and ice knocked out wells, processing facilities, and pipelines, according to a federal report. In Texas, the nation's largest natural gas-producing state, production declined by about 45% to 11.8 billion cubic feet per day on February 17th, down from 21.3 billion cubic feet per day during the week before the winter storm, according to consulting firm IHS Markit. As a result, U.S. production fell by 21% to 69.7 billion cubic feet per day on February 17th, down from nearly 18.9 billion cubic feet per day from the week ended February 13th, according to the Energy Department. The Energy Department said the decline in natural gas output was mostly a result of freeze-offs, which occur when water and other liquids used in hydraulic fracturing freeze at the wellhead and in natural gas gathering lines. While production facilities are winterized in the north, those in Texas are not. Natural gas production infrastructure, such as wellheads, gathering lines, and processing facilities in Texas, are more susceptible to the effects of extremely cold weather, the Energy Department said. Although natural gas companies ramped up production ahead of the storm in anticipation of higher demand for heating and electricity, the lack of winterization and power outages to well sites caused supply chain issues that contributed to the failure of the power grid, experts said. The power outages and freezing temperatures kicked off a vicious cycle in which producers couldn't deliver enough gas to power plants, shutting down power plants and reducing further gas production. Natural gas output in Texas began to recover as temperatures started to rise after February 17th. Daily production reached an estimated 20.9 billion cubic feet per day on February 24th, about 300 million cubic feet less than the average before the storm, the Energy Department said.
Obituaries and death notices. Jimmy Dale Thompson Tarpley, age 84, of Brady, died Wednesday, February 24th, at Brady West Rehab and Nursing Center. A graveside funeral service will be at 5 o'clock Friday, February 26th, at the Coleman City Cemetery Pavilion. Interment will follow in the Coleman City Cemetery. Services are entrusted to Stevens Funeral Home in Coleman. Remembrances, condolences, and messages of comfort can be expressed to the family at www.livingmemorials.com. A memorial service for Mary Alice Hoag is planned for Friday, February 26th at 2 p.m. at First Baptist Church in Midland. January 4th, Mary Alice passed away peacefully at her home of natural causes. She was 97 years old. There will be no viewing or cemetery service. Mary Alice left her body to Texas Tech Medical School for advanced medical science. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to Living Hope Church, Green River, Wyoming, 82935. Henry Rowland, 59, of Odessa, passed from this life on February 19th in Odessa. He is survived by four siblings. There are no services scheduled at this time. Margarita Ramirez, 89, of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 22nd. Viewing will be held on Thursday, March 4th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and on Friday, March 5th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. The family will hold a rosary that evening at the family's residence. Maria Celia Sands, 87, of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 15th. Viewing will be held on Saturday, February 27th, from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Immediately following, at 3 p.m., will be a prayer and memorial service at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. The family will hold a rosary that evening as at the family's residence. Webster James Del Combre, 72, of Midland, passed away from this life on February 16th. There will be no services held at this time.
Hello, this is Michael. Due to a technical difficulty with the first audio file from the Odessa American, I'll be reading the first story from the front page. Linda will be reading the rest of the Odessa American after this first story. At the top of the front page of the Odessa American, Friday, February 26th, 2021. Final first dose at Ratliff is Sunday. By Federico Martinez. MCHS will offer one final mass Pfizer vaccination event, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday at Ratliff Coliseum, MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said during a Thursday Zoom press conference with other local health officials. Future vaccination opportunities will be offered at urgent care clinics in the near future, Tippin said. Those details have not been announced. This is the last week to get the vaccine at Ratliff Stadium, MCH Chief Nursing Officer Christian Abbott Timmons said. This week we've administered about 5,000 doses, but we expect a higher number on Sunday. People who received their first vaccine shot this week and in the future will get their second booster shots through Odessa Regional Medical Center, ORMC Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Saravanan said. Just to clarify, those people who received their shots at Ratliff Stadium will be scheduled to receive their appointments in 21 days, so beginning March 15th, Saravanan said. ORMC, late next week, will begin sending email booster shot appointment notices to residents, Saravanan said. If people need to schedule a different date for their booster, they will be instructed to call a number listed in the email. COVID-19 numbers remained low at area hospitals on Thursday. MCH reported 28 COVID patients, 14 in ICU, and 9 on ventilators. ORMC reported 9 COVID patients, all of whom are in ICU and 2 on ventilators. Scenic Mountain Medical Center had no COVID patients on Thursday. MCH has scheduled mass Pfizer booster vaccination events 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. March 2nd through 5th at Ratliff Stadium. Those booster shots will only be given to those whose scheduled shots last week were canceled when expected vaccine shipments did not arrive due to wintry weather. No appointment is necessary, but attendees should bring their card indicating they have already received their first shot. Those that do not have proof that they have received their initial vaccine will be turned away.
Fathead Meats, helping Jesus House. Bring canned food and get a free sandwich Saturday, by Michael Bauer. It all started with a simple barbecue sandwich. One day after leaving Sam's, Jesus House Executive Director Donnie Kiker saw that the Fathead Meats food truck was there. And after placing an order, he found his new favorite barbecue place. We grabbed some of their foods, and it's one of the best barbecue sandwiches I ever had. Hands down, Kiker said. I fell in love with it. From there, a friendship was forged between him and the food truck owners, Junior Hernandez and Rory Couch. That friendship will help restock the shelves with canned goods at the Jesus House Odessa this week. Saturday, Jesus House and Fathead Meats will have a food drive from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. at 6101 West Highway 80 East, where anyone who brings in 5 cans of food can get a free brisket sandwich. Last week's winter freeze wiped out the Jesus House Odessa outside pantry, and it wasn't long before they were in need of help. Hernandez said he stumbled across a Facebook post from Kiker asking the community for help, and it wasn't long before he and Couch thought up the idea to help out. We saw that the pantry was empty, Hernandez said. He's been a frequent customer of ours. We're friends on Facebook, and we all jumped on it. We wanted to help. He's lived in this community all of our lives. This community is strong. We come together, and that was our opportunity to help out. Fathead Meats has been open for just a little over 5 months now. Hernandez and Couch, who are both longtime Permian Basin residents, began the food truck business shortly after being laid off from their previous jobs. Their business, though, has been closed for the last 2 weeks as they await their new shipping container. Hernandez and Couch were originally planning on having their grand reopening this Saturday, but will now push it back to next week in order to do this week's fundraiser. We've been waiting for our shipping container, and we thought this would be more important than our grand opening, Hernandez said. That's what we did. Now we're making sure that we have everything ready. We're dotting the I's and crossing the T's for this event. Hernandez is excited about Saturday's event that can help get the word out about their new location, as well as to help out a friend. It'll help because we're at a new location, Hernandez said. We have a new building, but the primary reason is that it's been about helping the community out. Donnie has become a friend. He donates his time. We donate when we can, if we're lucky. He does it every day. That's a true guy. For Couch and Hernandez, giving back to the community has been a big part of their business. It feels great, Couch said. Really, it's what we're supposed to do. We've had a lot of help to get to where we are today. It's what we're supposed to do. People have helped us out. Everyone is a big part of why we've been able to grow as a small company with no money. To us, it's what we're supposed to do. Kiker says they've already received around 2,400 pounds of canned foods. He's estimating on Saturday, that they'll get another 2,000 pounds. It keeps us in business, Kiker said. We were basically shut down. We didn't have any food to hand out. Mid-Cities and other organizations like Fathead Meats stepped up and restocked our pantry. We have 4 families tomorrow to get food. Without all of this, we couldn't do this. Other than the pantry food being wiped out in the freeze, Kiker said they were still fortunate not to lose water or power at Jesus House last week. "We were really blessed last week," Kiker said. "We just lost our canned food pantry. All we're doing now is reaching out to the community, to the ones who were hit hard." Kiker says all canned goods are accepted, just as long as they aren't expired. People can drop them off Saturday or any time Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to noon at the Jesus House location at 1335 East 6th in Odessa. Black History Exhibit Set Sunday. St. Matthew Baptist Church, 809 Barrett Drive, will stage an outdoor Black History Month-related exhibit from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday. The Reverend R. Brandon Marshall, pastor, said the event's theme will be On the Shoulders of Greatness, a walk through history. Music will be performed and food offered, the Reverend Marshall said. Photos will be displayed of such icons as Dr. Martin Luther King, Oprah Winfrey, late U.S. Representative John Lewis, Republican Georgia, former President Barack Obama, Vice President Kamala Harris, and 19th century abolitionist Harriet Tubman. St. Matthew Baptist Church's email address is smbcodessa@gmail.com. Ector Volunteer Fire Department adds brush truck to fleet. A press release detailed the Ector Volunteer Fire Department added a new brush truck through a cost share grant with the Rural Volunteer Fire Department Assistance Program, administered by Texas A&M Forest Service. This truck will be designated as the replacement for an apparatus we used for brush fires and rescue, EVFT Fire Chief James Cobb stated in the press release. It has already been used in response several times. The brush truck is reportedly a 2020 F-550 and has a 300-gallon water tank, 10-gallon foam tank, backup camera, scene lights, and front-mounted winch. Foam is used in fire suppression because it helps to cool the fire and coat the fuel, resulting in quicker fire suppression. The foam system will help in a quick knockdown of grass fires, and the scene lighting will be an improvement and benefit in our rural area, Cobb stated. Ector Volunteer Fire Department was established in 1948 and has 16 volunteers to help cover the department's protection area and in mutual response, the press release stated. Texas A&M Forest Service protects lives and property through the Rural Volunteer Fire Department Assistance Program, a cost-share program funded by Texas State Legislature and administered by Texas A&M Forest Service. This program provides funding to rural volunteer fire departments for the acquisition of firefighting vehicles, fire and rescue equipment, protective clothing, dry hydrants, computer systems, and firefighter training. Local News Roundup. Pastoral Installation Service. Impact City Church, 914 North Texas, has scheduled a pastoral installation service for the Reverend John Carranco, noon Saturday. Guest speakers will be the Reverend Dr. Phil Brassfield of Destiny Ministries and the worship team of the Pursuit Church of Harlingen. Visit tinyurl.com/XC2ZTJJH for more information. Obituaries for Friday, February 26th. Louis Victor Pop Teakle. Louis Victor Teakle Pop was born April 4, 1937 in Newkirk, New Mexico, and passed away February 20th at the age of 83 at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. He was preceded in death by his parents, Robert Paul Teakle and Mary Hope Tapia Teakle, his brother Ray Teakle, and his daughter Donna Lynn Teekle Jones. He is survived by his wife of 62 years, Gladys Mima Teekle, his brother Bobby Teekle and wife Janet of Tucumcari, New Mexico, sisters Rita Kochenauer and husband Jack of Newark, Ohio, and Bertha Laredo of Tucumcari, New Mexico. Also his children, Randy Teekle and wife Sheila of Salina, Vicki Watkins and husband Gary of Odessa, son-in-law Mike Jones of Trenton, Robert Teekle and wife Leanne of Hideaway Lake, Mike Garten and wife Brenda of Odessa, and Debbie May and husband Doug of Fort Worth. Also 16 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, and numerous nephews, nieces, and great-nephews and nieces. A celebration of life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 27th at Calvary Baptist Church in Odessa. The family requests consideration to make a memorial donation to Donna's house, 4553 Mostyn Lake Drive, Magnolia, Texas, 77354, or online www.herjourney.org. Lydia Cortez, San Antonio. Lydia was born August 18th, 1952 in San Antonio, the fifth child out of 14 children born to Martin Cortez and Dora Alonso. She passed away February 10th in San Antonio. She was predeceased by her father, Martin Cortez Sr., siblings Richard Cortez, Paula Makowiak, Hope Cortez, Sylvia Bustos, and Hortensia Mancha. Surviving her are her brother, Martin Cortez Jr., sisters Yolanda and husband Eliseo Herrera, Rosie and husband Mike Silva, Elvia and husband Jose Munoz, Francis Hernandez, Lisa Cortez and Brenda Cortez, all of Odessa, Connie Delgado of San Antonio, numerous nephews, nieces, and cousins. Services will be held visitation Sunday, February 28th from noon to 8 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Rosary will be recited Sunday at 5 p.m. at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Mass will be celebrated Monday, March 1st at 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church, followed by burial at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Leroy Parra Lopez. Leroy Parra Lopez, 67, passed away at home February 23rd. He is preceded in death by his parents, Catalino Juana Lopez, Catalino and Juana Lopez, and his grandparents, Manuel and Victoria Contreras Lopez. He is survived by 4 sisters, Neri Robles, Neri Anaya, Elizabeth Martinez, and Sandra Arredondo, 8 brothers, Joe Lopez, John Lopez, Eugene Lopez, Ubaldo Barney Lopez, Renee Lopez, Jacob Lopez, Ray Lopez, and Robert Lopez, as well as numerous cousins. His first wife, Gwen Stefani, as he used to say, current wife Isabel Romo Lopez, son Christopher Lee Lopez, daughter Marcy Lopez, and husband Chris Ellsworth, and 2 grandchildren. A memorial service will be held Saturday, February 27th at 3 p.m. at Parkview Church of Christ in Odessa. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel, and condolences may be sent to the family online at acreswestfuneral.com. Death notices. Geraldine Ann Jerry Blake. Geraldine Ann Jerry Blake, 75, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 20th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Webster James Del Cambra. Webster James Del Cambra, 72, died Monday, February 16th in Midland. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Crematory of Midland. Adalberto G. Inoos. Adalberto G. Inoos, 89, of Odessa, died Saturday, February 20th. Mass will be celebrated at 1 p.m. February 27th at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church. There will not be a burial. Family has opted for cremation. Father Chavez is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Henry Rowland. Henry Rowland, 59, died Sunday, February 19th in Odessa. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Rose Kathleen Stewart. Rose Kathleen Stewart, 70, of Odessa, died Thursday, February 18th. A memorial service was held Friday, February 26th at Refuge Ministries with Pastor Lavetta Shelton, Don Belk, and Tim O'Neill officiating. Arrangements by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.